Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Wednesday, June 7th edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. The theme of today's show, if I could paraphrase one Dennis Dick, is Amazon versus everybody. We're going to talk about the sell-off in Macy's yesterday, and it seems like there's a select number of companies that seem to be immune from Amazon right now. We've talked about this before, but we're going to cover it again because of some movement in the market yesterday. We're also going to talk about Elon Musk's comments. Don't worry, he says they're on track to produce the cars they said they would, so if you were panicking, don't panic. Faith in Elon, according to Elon, that is. We have earnings today in Dave & Buster's, Amba, United Foods, and a nice pair trade being made by BMO Capital in ratings land. Also, maybe we'll talk about Taylor Brands. They report today after the bell, and Joel wants to know if that was the worst merger of all time. Our guest today at 8:35 is Peter Brandt. If that doesn't ring a bell, maybe it should. He is the founder and CEO of Factor LLC, a prop trading firm founded in the early 80s. Peter's been trading for 42 years and has been around the block a few times and has got a lot of stories about the market. So we're going to really excited to talk with Peter Brandt. He may be the oldest guest we've ever had on the show. Joel, how's it going with the S&Ps right now?
We're looking good. We're up $1.75. Holding those lows from Friday and Tuesday. So there's your big number on the downside, 24.27. Pre-market low 28.25 on the upside, only went to 33.25. Tuesday's high 35.75 and the all-time high 39.75. Crude in the red here by 33 cents. Nice rally yesterday. I believe got hit on an inventory number last night. So we're trading down 33 cents at 47.86. And we talk about whole numbers in stocks. We could talk about whole numbers in gold and 1300, that seems to be a big level. We hit it yesterday. We hit it back in April. So we'll see if we can crash to that level. Down 580 at 1291.70. Silver in the red as well by 11 cents. Dennis, how you doing here on this Wednesday morning?
This is more like it. When we come in yesterday, I didn't know if my computers was working with the market down. Now the market's up. Now that's more like it. That's the normal market we all know and love. Coming right back from yesterday's losses here. Everything bounces back. So you had the 24-hour sell-off, but we're right back near all-time highs.
Yeah, but it didn't get back during the regular session. It was really a tight range again, Dennis. What do you make of these 2 days of really 10 to 12-point ranges? And if that's that maybe is like the entire Globex range and even tighter intraday here. Very, very low volatility and quiet market. So that bodes well for more upside action.
Yeah. It's just hard to fight the tape. We know, certain stocks just keep running. And, Spencer hinted off the bat, Amazon had a little pullback yesterday. It's right up here again today. But they've been taking on the whole world here. And do you want to start right into this? Because let's jump into the stocks that have been battling with Amazon and losing all of their market share, it looks like, to Amazon. And that's the retailers, the big box department stores, annihilated yesterday. Macy's murdered. Nordstrom murdered. Kohl's murdered. Dillard's hit hard. I mean, these stocks, let's go to the Macy's chart, because the Macy's chart is one ugly chart. I saw somebody on CNBC last night just talking, one of their guests, and was saying Macy's, is really hard. Big volume, big down days. Like, this could be a capitulation bottom here. And I'm looking at that Macy's chart and thinking, how many times in the last 2 years could you have said, oh, this is the capitulation bottom in Macy's? I mean, let's just go back out to the monthlies here. 2015, the stock hit $73. 2 years later, we're now at 21, and it doesn't look like it's a bottom to me. It just looks like every time this thing, lifts a little bit, more sellers come in. Even looking in the last few weeks, I've been saying the retailers are starting to show some life, and this is what they do. They start to show a little bit of life, and then they just get slammed once again. I mean, Macy's, what was the catalyst yesterday that, really kickstarted the sell-off in the department store, Spencer?
Well, yeah, the reason this came up on the pre-market show, and this actually broke, I think, during our show yesterday, that Amazon will be offering discounts on their Prime membership to people who are on food stamps, which is significant because, according, I saw a stat yesterday, 18% of all food stamp money last year went to Walmart, right? It's a very, very popular option for people on food stamps. Obviously, it's cheap. It's a one-stop shop. So the fact that those people are going to be now getting discounts on Amazon Prime, if I'm Walmart, I am furious right now. Furious.
And that hit Walmart yesterday. But, you know, I'm still categorizing Walmart as kind of the exception to Amazon. Not that it's Amazon-proof. Nothing, it seems like, is Amazon-proof. They figure out everything eventually. But Walmart's a different type of shopper than a Macy's. You know, Macy's, there's stuff you can buy right online. Walmart, it's discount. They want to go in. They want to get the stuff today. I mean, they got the whole grocery store thing going on there as well. I just think Amazon is having a little more trouble. But Walmart got hit yesterday on that Amazon headline. So it's not like Amazon doesn't want to take on everyone. They want to take on everyone, including Walmart. But just jumping back to the Macy's here, I mean, this one, before we go back to the Walmart, Macy's is just ugly, Joel. And I don't even know what to say here. The thing's got a 6.85% dividend. I know when the dividends start getting over 6%, they're often not safe. Now it's 6.85. It's approaching 7%, the dividend. I don't know if it's safe.
Back in October of 2010, February 2011, you had a 21.69 low. So that going just below the current low that you had at 21.86. But, okay, first of all, if you want to take a flyer on this up 15 cents, then you're using a tight stop here, right? If it takes out the low of the move, I think what you would rather see, and this is a pretty heavily traded stock too, so you could see maybe a double bottom or a triple bottom or something at least to lean on here if you're so inclined to try and pick a bottom in the issue.
Why would you be inclined even to do it, though? Like, I know that guy on CNBC was saying last night, capitulation bottom. And just, you know, for explanation, capitulation bottom is when you have a big washout day, volume climbs huge down, you know, huge red candle. And sometimes, you know, that's the end of it. That's like everybody washed out the one to get out. Sometimes that happens, but I just see it so many times. He could have said this on Macy's just even 3 weeks ago when the stock had the big bad day from 27 down to 24 and a quarter. Closed near the lows that day. What did it do? Just kept going lower. So I don't know how you can argue, you know, that this could potentially be a bottom. I just can't even, like, every time this thing rallies, think about the overhead supply there too, Joel. I mean, that's why it struggled really in the entire month of May. It was rallying a little bit, but there was just so many sellers overhead again. And then, you know, one bad headline and boom, we slam it down again. I think this thing's going to be a teeny bopper.
Yeah, 20 you could hold out, maybe 20 a nice round number, single digits, you know, that could take a little while. But I keep on reading that they are going, you know, they're closing these big stores and they're going more into the discounts. So I don't know how long that's going to take to do the transition, but they're going to have to shut a lot of stores and sell a lot of stuff discount. Let's just take a look at the chart of some of these others. Kohl's, same story here. Took out the low of the move yesterday, 35. That actually looks like it's holding up better. Target, that one, that's holding up above the low of the move, 52.72. But you can almost put all these charts just on top of each other, and you see the big gaps down. Sears, I don't know why the heck that went to 14 a couple weeks ago. But
craziness.
Yeah.
Just a gift is what that was. And we're right back at $6. And the same thing, look at JCPenney here right now. 4.72 right now. Remember multiple times JCPenney went up over $10 and everybody's like, oh, they're turning it around. They're not turning it around. I mean, everything is just, you know, and nothing goes straight to zero. And, you know, there's always going to be a little, you know, hope, and there's always going to be, you know, oh, the same store sales were climbing for the month. The long-term trend on all of these things is down. And that's why none of these stocks are in my investment portfolio, because it's not only the long-term trend of the stocks, it's a long-term trend of their sales growth. It's a long-term trend of the companies themselves. And I just can't see jumping in any of these things. Macy's, I believe, is a value trap. Kohl's, I was in Kohl's a couple years ago, and I'm so glad it had that ridiculous rally from 35 to 60, because that allowed me to get out of my stock. I ended up selling at 46 or 47 bucks, and I was happy to get out. I know I sold early, but I'm happy that I'm out of it now, 35.73. I just can't put my money in these things, not when we've got the Amazon vulture overhead lurking and taking out every retailer that's out there.
I will give you a free lunch if you can remember what the catalyst for JCPenney. I think this was in 2006, 2007 when it went to $87.18. Remember
wow,
that?
$87.
Was that?
Well, was that? I can't remember that. No, it was $87 just a decade ago, eh?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's when they hired Ron Johnson, I think, from Apple, and he was going to come in and fix everything up. I think.
I feel like that was later.
That was
later.
Did
rally.
Right.
I think that was the rally to 40.
You're right.
We were getting up there towards 40 and 11.
Yeah.
I think that's when that was, when we went from like the 20 to 40 bucks. I feel like that was Ron Johnson.
I think you're right. Good thing I didn't give you a line.
I don't think JCPenney is, you know, and it's a different story. Am I coming in here and shorting a $4 stock? No, because short squeezes kill you on those things. I mean, there's not enough meat on the bone. But all I'm saying, even Macy's, it's hard to come shorting here now. You know, you're kind of late to the party. The party was, you know, back in October when this thing got up to 45 bucks in a nice double top up there. It's all about setups here. Now you're just in a free fall. I mean, maybe you'll get another setup here again. But I'm not coming in here just with new money and saying, look, Macy's is cheap. You know, like this person on CNBC was saying, I think, you know, this is a potential bottom. Because we've seen it too many times before that's, you know, just killed you. And I just don't see Macy's turning it around anytime soon. And if they go the way of Sears and JCPenney, which I don't think that's out of the realm of possibilities that you could call Macy's maybe the next JCPenney. I mean, this thing could be a teenager or even a single-digit stock eventually.
Costco, we just real quickly, we talked about the anti-Amazon stocks. Costco, you want that. Go there, big bulk, fresh food, hard to ship, that kind of stuff. Costco, same thing with Home Depot, these builders.
Home Depot, Lowe's, just,
yeah.
Yep.
You go there.
All those fit the Amazon. They're not Amazon. I'm going to say nothing's Amazon proof, but they have an edge here that, you know, it's hard to ship. And we've talked about this on the show. It's hard to ship out, you know, huge, you know, for your construction companies, huge amounts of lumber, you know, ordering it on Amazon. They want to go to Home Depot. They want to get their stuff right today. We've got our job. This is our inventory list. They fill it and they, you know, leave with the stuff. And, you know, and just like, people want to go in there. They want to see the stuff. You know, they want to go in there. You were arguing even Tiffany's, which this is an interesting argument, Joel. Give us your argument on why Tiffany's has kind of not went down. One of the retailers that has held up.
Yeah, you go buy a $2,000-$4,000 piece of jewelry. I mean, you want to go in there and look it, try it on, talk to the jeweler. I mean, it's not something, and I'm not sure what they offer on that. And also, you're buying a wedding ring or something. You like to go into the store with your potential bride and shop things out. So that's a potential. That bounced back right after earnings. You know, you talk about I do talk about levels, but I also like to associate days with levels. And that day it had the earnings miss. It immediately bottomed at 84, getting back up to try and fill the gap there in Tiffany's. Need to get back over 93 to fill that gap.
So that's the Amazon story here. We haven't even talked about the chart of Amazon itself, which just continues to climb. And people say, man, the valuation on this thing. But they just continue to grow sales and take on every industry here. So, and, you know, like, you know, it's been said before on this show, if they were actually putting, you know, all their, you know, profits and not, you know, reinvesting and not trying to grow, if they just started to decide we want to start becoming a cash cow, they would be making a lot more money. So you can't just look at this and say, oh, it's got a, you know, valuation, you know, it's ridiculous here. Because the sales number, you know, is incredible for Amazon.
Do you know what percentage of retail sales that they have, overall percentage?
That would be a cool number. You have that number?
I do have that number.
What is it?
10%.
They're 10% of all sales of everything.
Of retail sales, yep. But you know what it was 3-4 years ago?
What was it?
6%.
And that's growing, and that trend is growing. And you know what it's going to be in 3-4 years? Probably 14 or 15%.
Yeah.
So. It's growing. There's a lot of room to grow there yet. You know, when you think about that, you say 10%. That's not that much.
No,
you know, so, you know, they keep taking it on. And that's another argument, too. You know, I was just actually, I was talking with my wife about, you know, Macy's, and she's like, well, yeah, but, you know, there's still a lot of people going to the stores. One thing to consider is Amazon doesn't have to get all their sales. There's so much overhead, and their margins are tight at these stores, you know, when you get the Macy's and the Kohl's, because they're selling stuff pretty cheap. So if sales fall 10, 15, 20%, these companies are in big trouble. So they don't have to fall 50%. They don't have to fall 80% of sales. They don't have to fall 100% at companies like Macy's. They fall 10, 15%. These companies are in trouble. So losing 5, 6, 7, 8% of your sales to Amazon is the difference between making money and losing money for a lot of these big box department stores, because they have so much expenses.
All right, we got some earnings plays here to talk about.
Jumping over here to AMBA, Ambarella, AMBA, reported last night. Stock got hit. It's trying to come back. Spencer, give us the details on the Ambarella report.
AMBA reported Q1 adjusted EPS of 39 cents. That beat the estimate by 3 cents. Sales of 64.1 versus $63.48 million. So a little bit of a miss on that number. As far as Q2 sales coming in, they see $69 to $72 million for the quarter. $72 million was the estimate. They're also adding an additional $50 million stock buyback.
And the stock here is off the lows, Joe. We got hit. I saw a 55 handle last night. Now we're back in the 57, so the buy the dippers must be out there on AMBA.
Yeah, you did get a dip to 55.27. You revisited it, but now you're $2 above that, up at 57.11. So I expect that area to be protected here. Not a lot in the daily charts backing that up. I do see a low, couple lows in the middle 54 handle. But when you see a drop and then a pop and then it doesn't go back and continue making new lows, I think you may have seen the low of the day in here. If you get a nice kind of rally anywhere near the 58 level, 58 even, last three lows in the lower 58s, that's going to be your resistance today.
Downward Dog giving us some stats here, and I didn't look this up. Those come from Downward Dog in the chat, though. He says, sells at less than 5x cash.
Really?
So, yeah, there's some value there is what he's saying in AMBA. You know what? I looked up, I had it on my list at one time, and you know how I'm a value investor. So when I was looking probably a year ago, I probably was finding similar stats that, hey, this actually is pretty cheap when you start looking at it that way. So I actually had it on my list to, you know, maybe put an investment in this, but I never did. But it wouldn't have probably made my list unless there was some value there, because I only buy value stocks. It's my style. I'm the Warren Buffett style.
All right, let's move on. Dave & Buster's, one of your favorite places. How'd they do?
Fast ticker symbol, PLAY. How'd they do, Spencer?
Play reported Q1 EPS of 98 cents versus an 81 cent estimate. The adjusted EPS is 87 cents versus the 81 cent estimate. Sales of $304 million versus a $299 million estimate. So they beat the sales number there by a tad. They also announced a $100 million share buyback, and they're raising their fiscal year sales guidance. It was 1.15 to 1.17. Now it's 1.16 to $1.17 billion. So they updated a little bit there.
It got hit, and it's coming back too. What was the low?
Pre-market low here is just under $67. You actually put a little double bottom in there at 66.80. Now getting a little pop up. We're going to be dealing with yesterday's low here, though, in the session. We're back above yesterday's low. Yesterday's low was 67.38, so that could come back into play. That coincides with the pre-market low. Another level, if you get back green on the session, 70.17. That was your all-time closing high. Backed up by the all-time high at 70.42. So we'll see what happens here. If we can get off the mat here in Dave & Buster's, let's see here. If you really start to go into reverse, look out for your four-day low at 65.78.
I think it's on the comeback trail, though. So I think, like, yesterday's high, I wouldn't be surprised if this thing even got green. Come back quite a bit ways from the low there. So 70.42, this is a stock that just everybody loves to own. You can see just from the weeklies, monthlies, trend is your friend here, and they're already buying it on the weekly report. Navistar, NAV, trading down in the pre-market. Spencer, details for Navistar's earnings, which just came out this morning.
What is NAV's NAV? Q2 EPS, 86 cent loss versus a 5 cent gain in the same quarter last year. Sales of $2.096 billion versus a $2.07 billion estimate. So they beat that there by a tad. But the EPS year over year, again, not good. And their 10Q did mention the U.S. DOD subpoena and the details involving that, and not great.
Ran up ahead of the report. They all were wrong because the stock has given it all back. It's two-day run right back here, 27. Actually, I saw a trade down 27.08, so it's trading in the lower 27s. It's 27.85 here right now, a little bit on the comeback trail from where it was just earlier here in the pre-market, but giving back its basically last two-day run.
Yeah, this one, I don't know if you could really throw it in the Trump stock category. I guess so. It has had a nice run. Now you're pulling back those last 2 days of major buying. People are going to be scratching their heads. But you're still looking at that two-day low. And that coincides with the pre-market low. Pre-market low, Dennis mentioned, to 27.08. You have a low here at 27, a little gap to fill. So that's important to hold. If not, a lot of air until your two-day low at 26.79. So we'll see what happens here in Navistar. Nice run-up. They don't like to report. Let's see if we can hold on to some of those gains in the last two sessions.
All right. We don't pat ourselves on the back that much, Joel, but we do pat ourselves on the back, and we pat ourselves on the back on the pre-pre-market show. Yuri in the chat's asking, how do we listen to the pre-pre-market show? We talk about that sometimes. Just joking. That is our conversation that we have about 5 minutes before the show, saying, what are we talking about today?
It's a little more than 5 minutes.
Yeah, Dennis.
You're right.
Give us some credit here.
Yeah.
It's our 15-minute conversation on saying, which stocks, what's happening today, and what do you see out there, and what are we going to talk about on the show today? So that's our discussion. And we joke that's the pre-pre-market show as we prepare for the pre-market prep show. Believe it or not, we wing most of it, but we don't wing everything.
Well, anyways,
I went on the tangent here, but what I was going to talk about was yesterday we actually were making a call on Twitter. Me and you both were looking at this Twitter setup, and we're like, man, this looks like a head and shoulders. If it takes out that 18, look out below. And it did take out the 18, and it was to look out below. Fell 50 cents yesterday. Pretty good hit there for Twitter. It's bouncing back a little bit here today. But that $18, which was support for the last month, now becomes a major resistance, in my opinion. And I think, you know, barring any major headline here, that the Twitter story is not looking as pretty as it was even a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, no, I mean, unless you get, like, an upgrade or someone here to throw, you know, a little fly in the ointment, that area is now going to be resistance. And you know, we talk about when something travels up from an area, right, very quickly, it can do the same. Twitter falling back here, you can see there's two different gaps to fill. Big earnings gap all the way down to 15, Dennis. I don't know how it's going to work its way down there, but nice pattern recognition there on Twitter. Nice head and shoulders top, and now falling in, maybe $17. I see another low at $17.37. But I guess when me and you are both bearish Twitter, that there's virtually no way that it can go up.
Usually when me and Joel are on the same side, it usually always goes the other way. So in this case, we were right, though. So we'll pat ourselves on the back because we were right here. What do you think of Snap? We'll talk SNAP just because it's kind of hanging here, too. And the chart doesn't look nothing like Twitter's, but it's hanging here. Right around $20. And that is a little bit concerning to me because, you know, you look here and, you know, you had the 20 and you ran up 22. Now you're hanging here at 20 again. Maybe we hang out for a few more days. But if we start taking out, and I'll call it a neckline here too, around $20 on Snap, this thing could be challenging its all-time lows again.
Yeah, it's kind of like a gimpy head and shoulders, right? Like the
there's
like
something wrong with that. The right shoulder doesn't match the left.
20 looks big here.
You should write that. You know that technical the gimpy head and shoulders.
what happened is I think J.P. Morgan got in on this one right 2 days ago and hit it with a downgrade. I mean, for a person that's never used Snapchat, I know what the kids do. Monetization here with your Facebook. I mean, look what problem Twitter's had here. So 20 looks big. You just see all those daily lows there. And once again, you know, when you're looking for, you know, technical levels, you know, if you could put a, you know, little, you see the big gap down, that was on earnings day. Boom, the flush out, then the rebound, and now.
Yeah.
Now falling back down, let's see, 17.50 to 22. What's that, 4.5, 2.25, 19?
This is their math.
20 bucks is 50% retracement of the rally, too, Dennis. So adding more significance to Snapchat holding $20.
Important that it holds 20. I don't like it below 20. That's what I'll say. Starts cutting out through 20. You know, get a close below 20, and I think it's in trouble. So, not a fan here of this chart on
Snapchat.
Do
you use Snapchat?
No, I've never have. So, I'm not a fan of the stock or of the company either. I've never used Snapchat. Actually, my wife has it, and she makes all those funny faces. So, it's not true. She actually was making those funny dog faces of me using her phone, which I just found weird. So, you know,
I know,
like,
that's what...
Have you done that too?
I don't have it. Spencer, do you make those funny dog faces and cat and all kinds of different things?
No, but I use the app.
But you don't use it for that?
No.
Okay. You don't use it for the funny dog faces?
No, I don't.
No,
well, that would be the whole purpose, I thought.
It's too busy.
How exactly do you use Snapchat? So how is it different than just, like, I know the message disappears, but is that the whole cool thing about it? Like, I mean, it's a message, you know, you can send messages like an instant messenger just with disappearing messages. Is that the whole thing?
Yeah, and you can, do funny things with your pictures, like you said, with, like, the dog or the cat. What I noticed...
And that's worth $20 billion?
No, I actually...
Oh, my gosh, that is short and afloat.
I'm not done yet. No.
Well, this market's irrational. You know, things can happen, but because it makes funny dog pictures and disappearing messages, it makes it worth $20 billion.
Well, I was going to say, I noticed that when I graduated college now, was it 5 years ago? I noticed that Snapchat quickly became the medium with through which my friends and I kept in touch. We weren't texting. We were Snapchatting each other. And mostly because it didn't require the commitment of, like, a conversation. You can just send them a message and say, "Hey, man, I'm thinking about you. You know, hey, remember this? Boom, it's gone. 10 seconds. That's it. Done. No conversation. Just like random messages back and forth, and that, like, kind
text
of
text or pictures. Or both.
Both. Just like a picture of, "Hey, man, remember when we went to CVS? Boom, picture done." You know.
Can,
like,
you send it to more than one person?
Yeah.
You have followers and stuff on Snapchat.
You can't have. You have friends.
Okay.
Yeah, and so you send it to all your friends, and that became, like, you know, it became a way to keep in touch and without having to commit to a full conversation, right?
Okay. You don't have to commit to a full conversation texting either. I send Joel a text all the time, and then, you know, he'll respond back in 2 hours, and then maybe not respond back at all. So Joel doesn't commit to that either.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I don't know. I don't get it because I don't use it. Maybe it's the coolest thing, but it sounds faddish to me. I never like investing in fads.
Well, I'd be worried.
Maybe it isn't. Maybe this is the changing the world, and this is how the world's going to communicate, and it's going to be forever. But the next cool thing comes out, you know, next week. We're Snapchat. I don't know.
I'd be worried about the fact that Instagram and so Facebook basically has now copied all of the features from Snapchat. They cannibalize each other.
There you go.
So a lot of people I know just I don't use Instagram. I have one. I don't use it. I've used it like twice in like 5 years, but I know people that are just switching over because it's all under one umbrella. They already use Instagram. It's got the same features now, so what's the point?
It's for people that have friends, Dennis, and we don't have any friends, so we really...
Maybe that's what it is.
I don't have many friends either. I thought you guys are my friends.
All right, how about earnings from United Foods?
Oh, I missed that one, Joel.
Yeah, UNFI did report yesterday after the bell. Q3 adjusted EPS of 77 cents had beat by a penny. Sales of $2.37 billion versus $2.42, so a slight miss on the sales number there. They're also cutting their fiscal year 17 outlook. It was $9.38 to $9.46 billion. Now it's $9.29 to $9.34 billion, so they cut it there by a decent amount, enough to hit the stock.
And the stock was trading down in the 39 handle last night. It closed at last night after our session right at $40 on the kisser. It's wide this morning. Zero trades shows trade in the pre-market. 39.18 to 41.48. But if the indication from last night is anything, it's probably going to trade down near 40.
You got a pre-market low, actually, Dennis, of 38 even. That takes out a series of lows. I see what you're talking about there. Bases the chart at 39. So we're trading above it right now at 40 even. So let's see if those buyers reemerge at 39, because they did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times since April. And I'm just looking up United Foods here. I'm trying to see specialty foods from around the world. I guess so much for my theory of Amazon's going to have to, you know, producers are going to have stuff to sell on there. So I don't know. Not a good look at chart. Important that you can hold 39 if it goes into reverse.
Let's jump over to the ratings land, because there's BMO is interesting here this morning. They are all over the beverage stocks. They are downgrading Coke. They are downgrading Pepsi. And they are upgrading Dr. Pepper, DPS.
And one more.
What's the other one?
COT.
Is that it traded here?
COT Corp.
Oh, it is COT, because it's a Canadian company, I believe. COT.
Yep.
So, but it is COT, so it trades over here as well. And they're upgrading COT?
Yep.
Okay, so on COT is bid up as 1.1420 as well. So you got downgrading two beverage stocks, upgrading the other two beverage stocks. You know what I know about Coke? It seems like every time Coke pulls back, it's just a buying opportunity. I see a 50-cent pullback in Coke here this morning. I don't know. Maybe, you know, BMO changes it. It's been on such a tear, though. Everybody likes the dividend, 3.25%. I just don't see them coming here and starting to hit Coke. I don't know what your thoughts are on this, Joel.
Yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, not, oh, wow, look at that run that it had. Holy Toledo. That's a big run for Coca-Cola. I don't know if I'd step in today, though, Dennis. At 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 up days in a row here. So maybe giving a little back. Wow, what a nice run in Coca-Cola.
It's been on a tear.
Yeah.
And you know what? It keeps taking out size. Like, it took out the size of 44, and you see the move up then. Then it took out the size of 45. Then it took just 2 days ago, took out, I think it was like a 500,000 share offer at 46. So it just keeps taking these, you know, size out, these institutional sellers there that are lightening up as the thing goes up. I feel like it is chasing it here now. I'm not saying I'm completely against the BMO call, but I don't know if it's, you know, just going to be a stock that's just going to get rocked all of a sudden, because there's a lot of people that would like this on a pullback.
All right, and they did the same with Pepsi, right? That's
Pepsi's been on an absolute tear as well. I mean, it's kind of slowed down, but you're talking about stocks all-time high too.
There you go, 118 and change. I see 118.12 as your all-time high, and you got three other highs represented right at that area. Double bottom at 117. So this is a thing for higher price stocks, but trading in a pretty tight range. Let's see. They got a print here under 117 in the pre-market. Bidder offered there, Dennis, at 117.
It's offered at 117. And you know what? It's a stock. It's got downgraded here today. Okay. And BMO is reputable. So there's going to be some people that are going to sell it on this. And it's been the first downgrade for these stocks in a while. So it might open some, you know, eyes up here. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Pepsi trades actively in the 116 handle here. Just like it's not surprising me that Coke's down 50 cents on this. I'm just saying that I don't know if it's one that's going to be down another 50 cents tomorrow and then down another 50 cents the next day. I just don't think there's that kind of pressure in these stocks, because they are kind of value stocks. They
exactly.
are a little bit defensive here. And I think, you know, there's a crowd of people, even myself included, that would probably buy Coke if it pulled back 3-4 points from where it's at.
For an intraday trade, not for nothing else, right?
Look at Coke as an investment.
Not up here.
Really, where has it went? I mean, really, you know, it's stable. I mean, it's a defensive stock. I mean, look at the monthlies here. Really, in the last 5-6 years, we've been between 35 and 45 bucks. So you get down to 40 bucks on Coke and not think it's going to do that. But if it was to pull back in the lower 40s, I might be interested. I've actually sad I missed the boat here on Coke. You know, it got down there February down to the low 40s. And there's a lot of other people sitting that are value investors like me that are probably saying, hey, Coke pulls back a buck or two, I'm going to put some of this in my investment portfolio. And I think that's why it has underneath demand. We always talk about overhead supply. Joel came up with the term underneath demand. And I think that's what Coke has.
And upgraded Dr. Pepper and Snapple.
Yes.
That's been in a range. Yeah. That's interesting. I had a gap down, probably earnings related. Good support at 92. I see the major resistance at 94, but looks if you could poke your head above 93 here. Couple highs just above 93 might give you some more upside. And actually, I've been having that Dr. Pepper. They have like a Diet Cranberry that's pretty good. I've been kind of preferring that over, over some of the other beverages here. So I'll give that an upgrade as well. All right, 8:34. We have one guest on today, and he is a good one. It's Peter Brandt. And he's a founder and CEO of Factor LLC. He's a prop trader in the commodities markets. A little floor background. We're going to give Peter a call right now. We'll be right back. Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Benzinga Pro. I'm your co-host, Joel Elkanen, along with Dennis Dick and Spencer Israel behind the glass. We have Peter Brandt on the line. He's a founder and CEO of Factor LLC. Peter, how you doing on this Wednesday morning?
I'm real good, real good, and hope the same holds for you guys.
All right. He made an interesting comment before he came on the line. He says we really got a great show, and he really enjoys it. He says he doesn't follow us that closely because he doesn't follow anyone. He follows his own indicators, and I think that's really a mark of a great trader. But Peter, before we get into your company and the book that you've written, you're a floor guy. And you were back at the Chicago Board of Trade, trading back there in the late 70s and early 80s. And as always, when we have a floor guy on, we like to, see if there's any good stories. This is a PG-rated show. So do you got any your favorite floor story or maybe something that you've taken away from your days in the pits?
Oh, my. Yeah, I mean, as Dennis, I think you were a Merc guy, so there's crazy stories. The personalities are amazing. The individuals are unique. I mean, nothing will replace the culture of the trading floor. I consider it to be a privilege in my life to have been involved at an exchange. A wonderful thing. I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is I always remember we used to have at the Board of Trade, we used to have something called worshiping the porcelain indicator. And if all of a sudden you went in the men's bathroom and there were a couple guys on their knees puking, you always knew that whatever market they were in was ready to turn.
Oh, wow. Would you go and knock on the door and say, oh, could you tell me what position you're getting out of here?
Well, you kind of knew from what was going on, right? I mean, something was on a big run and, they were holding on till the last and, they finally coughed it up. And, that would usually happen after a big bear market or a big bull market is people finally threw in the towel and were desperate. And
that's funny.
She kind of had a feel that the market was about ready to turn.
I'm gonna have to jot that one down. Okay, so let's get to your trading style. I know you've done a lot of work on technical analysis. So are you strictly technical? Do you throw the fundamentals in there? Were the fundamentals ever part of your game?
No, not really. In grains, yes, because I spent years at the Board of Trades, and I'm from an agricultural area, so I know the grain markets, especially corn market, and I lived and breathed corn for a number of years, so I have a sense for what's going on annually with grain fundamentals. But it's hard enough for me just to be a chartist. I mean, I can't imagine complicating my life by actually having to figure out what's driving markets, other than I am a believer in what I define as the dominant factor theory, which means, any real big bull market or bear market is generally driven by one factor, and that factor is usually not clear to most people until the move is over. And so fundamentals will move markets, especially the dominant fundamental will move a market over some period of time. But I really don't attempt to unlock that box.
All right. Any quick look at corn here. Nice move up. Big move on, it looks like, on Monday from 370 up to 380 here. I mean, I know a lot of these grain markets have been in downtrends or whatever. You see any kind of significant upside here on corn? It looks like it's trying to have a little bit of a breakout here.
Well, I think all the grains are bottoming, but the grain market, bottoms in the grain market can be agonizingly long. They can take sometimes 2-3 years or even more to really form a major bottom. And the danger in the grain market is a person gets in for a big move. And by a big move, I'd be talking about corn going to $6. I mean, a 10-cent move in corn is insignificant for me. I think most of the grains are preparing for an eventual bull market, that the bear market phase is over. We've seen the lows back in 2014, 15, 16, and in almost all the grains. Minneapolis spring wheat has emerged from a bottom and has now entered a bull market. corn will eventually, but I'm not I'm not sure. The one I'm interested in is soybean meal. Soybean meal, commitment of traders and soybean meal commercials have gone from where they were just a month or so ago at a record short position with specs at an all-time record high position. That's flip-flop in meal, where we now have commercials net long meal and approaching levels that historically would give us big bottoms. And so if one looks at closing price monthly charts of meal against the commercial net position, there's really a correlation between the commercials being long in meal and a meal bull market. So meal is the one I'm really focusing on now. In the grains, meal and Minneapolis wheat.
All right, we'll keep an eye on those as well. So you're on the floor, you have a big deck, a commercial deck, you're filling orders, and you also mentioned that you like to do corn spreads. We won't go into that today, but so what? How'd you get off the floor here? And you got off the floor in 19, or you started to transition upstairs in 1980. That was well ahead of the electronic boom. What got you off the floor?
Well, what got me off the floor is I got into charting. I really started. I wanted to be a prop trader. My goal was to be off the floor, trading all markets. The Board of Trade and the grain markets was my entree into commodities. I mean that's how I got into the business. But even back in 74, 75, I wanted to be a trader. Now, I didn't know I wanted to be a trader of things such as the Singapore Stock Index. I mean, I'm thinking about currencies and grains and livestock. But sugar caught my eye in the chart. And I saw a potential big move for sugar by just charting things. I'd go upstairs in the afternoon. You know, Board of Trade back then was done by 1:30. And, you know, I'd just chart different markets and take a look at different markets, see what different markets were doing. And I saw a setup that compared very well to what I was reading about in terms of the value of charting. And I became intrigued with the sugar move, traded the sugar move and wanted to focus on that. So I kind of stayed off the floor at the Board of Trade, played the sugar move, and eventually never really went back to the floor. And so that is really where I wanted to end up. And then in 1981, I split with Continental Grain Conti and established a proprietary trading firm. We set up a clearing operation at the time for a UK company, which was kind of our entree in to be able to do that type of business. But so, I traded the sugar move starting the end of 79 through really late 1980 and have been a chartist of commodities and Forex ever since.
All right, sugar not looking good here on the month. I'm just going to the SGG, the ETF here. It looks like it's running into some problems here trying to hold 30. That's in the ETF. But let's talk about your prop trading career. And you've talked about, you know, some of your successes here and what happened with sugar. But when we were talking yesterday, you've had a few bumps in the road as well. So share those experiences with our listeners.
Well, I mean, you always have bumps in the road as a trader. I mean, I think one thing that you've heard, but you don't really believe it until you have to go through it, and that is, you know, as a trader, even a profitable trader, the profits don't come in an amortized basis. I mean, you have good months, you have fabulous weeks, you have terrible weeks. I mean, it's cyclic, and you got to live through sometimes the bad times before you live through the good times. And sometimes along the way, you just get enormously bad trades. I remember back on, it was January 16th and of 1991, January 17th in the Mideast, when the bombing of the first Gulf War started. I was long crude oil at the time. Crude oil went out just above, it closed on the 16th, just above 30 cents. And I was sitting in my kitchen when all of a sudden CNN started reporting live the bombing of Iraq. And you know, and I felt like, oh, this is pretty good. I'm long crude. This can be a wonderful deal. I actually even called London at the time. We used to have, instead of 24 hours, we used to have back then what we called the curb market, the kind of an unofficial market that you could lay off risk when markets were not trading and weren't completely legal, but they were there. And, you know, on the curb, crude was trading up above 32 cents. And so I went to sleep that night feeling pretty good about myself and woke up in the morning. And it was kind of a buy the rumor, sell the fact type of thing. Crude oil opened under 23 cents, down, you know, nearly 900 points from the late night curb in London, and you know, $7.50 off of where it closed the previous day. And so, you know, I went from feeling good on the night of January 16th to having the worst trade I've ever had in my life, continues to be the worst trade I ever had in my life, on January 17th. When I took about, you know, a $7,000 contract loss in crude oil in a very short period of time.
And you had more than one or two on, I imagine.
I did. I think I had about 20.
Oh, boy. And just curious, because we talk about what to do in losing situations. Did you just cut out? Did you take your loss, or how did you handle that?
No, I just took my loss. I don't like to play with losses. I'm very adverse to losses, and if I have a losing trade, my trading rule is be out. Don't speculate with a loser. You speculate with winners. You don't speculate with losers.
That's something we try and stress here. All right, we've kept you for quite a while here, but this is a great interview. I just want to just throw one more question at you here. You know, we have a lot of aspiring investors and traders out there and different kind of markets. I know you've written a book. We could talk about that a little bit. Or just what words of wisdom from a veteran commodity trader would you give the people that are trying to tackle these treacherous markets?
Well, I mean, I think the big thing is manage your capital, manage your pile of chips. You know, everybody focuses on trade identification. You know, how do you have a 70% win rate or 80% win rate or whatever it is? And the focus is on finding the winning trade. It's on trade identification. It's on what one might call signaling. That is part of the trading equation. There's no question about it. But risk management, keeping your losses short, letting winners ride, it's kind of it's really, really being aggressive in making sure the market doesn't reduce the size of your chips. You know, making money in the markets, if you stay in for a while, is easy. Keeping it's the hard thing. And it's the keeping the profits that you've already made. That's the challenge. And that really comes from risk management. And no matter how you trade, a trader has got to be aggressive at cutting losses.
All right, great educational segment here with Peter Brandt, founder and CEO of Factor LLC, a veteran commodity trader, and he also gave us a new indicator, Spencer. Do you think we're going to have to do – can we do an article on the porcelain indicator today?
Sure, we can do it.
All right, Peter, thanks a lot. Great conversation, and we're going to dial you up again soon.
Hey, thanks, guys. Have a good day.
All right, 8:49 quiet market in the S&Ps here, 24.3075. Dennis, how'd you like that interview?
Oh, great. Lots of educational tidbits. Lots of nice quotes in there, too. So I'll have to write that one up, because lots to learn from somebody who's been in the markets as long as Peter has. So, well-respected trader out there. He's got like 47,000 followers on Twitter there. So get out there and follow him, Peter L. Brandt. So great interview there, Joel, and I enjoyed it a lot.
All right, 8:50 here. We got about 10 minutes left in the show. We did a little bit of ratings. Now, someone came in late for AMBA, and I don't know if they rewound the tape. Do you want to just
Downward Dog was asking about AMBA. Downward... We can go over it one more time. I mean, it is one of your big movers here of the day. So we were just saying AMBA obviously is off the lows here. What I found interesting, you know, you think of Ambarella as, you know, this growth stock, and, you know, but it's kind of a value stock here too. And Downward Dog was just pointing that out, that it actually sells for less than 5x cash. So there is some value here in a stock like AMBA as well. So it's not only a growth stock, but getting hit here a little bit this morning, the earnings obviously just a little bit weak. It's off the lows though, because it was in the 55 handle earlier.
Did they lose a GoPro contract or something? Did we mention that also?
I think, wasn't that last week?
Oh, that was last week. Okay, I thought it was.
And everybody, and this is interesting because everybody, you know, when GoPro was the hot thing, it was AMVA.
Oh, no, that was several weeks ago. That was in May. That was several weeks ago. Yeah.
But let's go back, you know, to when GoPro was hot in 2014 and 2015. And everybody was saying, oh, Ambarella, that's just a GoPro because they sell, you know, their parts or whatever the hell they sell to GoPro. So they were like a GoPro company. Well, isn't it interesting that GoPro is now, you know, an $8 stock and been killed? But AMVA was obviously not just that one-trick pony, because if you look 2015, actually AMVA is around the same price. I know it got up to 120, which really got overdone. But if you look at the beginning of 2015, it started the year around 59 bucks, and it's still at 59 bucks or 57 bucks. So it actually, you know, didn't go the way of GoPro.
And, well, you know, going farther out, obviously 50 is a main level. If you really want to try and buy it on the cheap, that's held up since June of last year. But I'm looking at the dailies here, and there's certain formations that, you know, Dennis and I like to focus on here on the show. And I'm looking at the three consecutive lows at the $58 level, just above 58. So theoretically, you know, that should be resistance. And so if it could get back above that level, whole 58, then, you know, I think this still has some upside. I didn't don't dig into the numbers as closely, just looking at it from a purely technical standpoint. So 58, that's not just a number for today. Going farther out, keep an eye on that in Ambarella.
Going to imbalance land here, Alibaba. There's been buyers in Alibaba. It seems like nonstop. It gets a little pullback there yesterday of a buck, but 114,000 shares to buy in Alibaba here once again. It's trading up 50 cents in the pre-market. So BABA looking strong here early. Just jumping around. Coke, 91,000 to sell. We know that is because of the BMO downgrade here this morning. Jumping back over to the financials, Bank of America, 95,000 to sell, which is going the opposite way of the other financials this morning because Goldman, Citigroup, Morgan Stanley are all trading higher. They're a bit higher, though, and you know what? They're starting to leak here. So that is a little bit concerning, actually, because the financials were a lot stronger earlier in the session, earlier in the pre-market here, and they are starting to leak here. So we're starting to see the market also. It's off about a buck and a half since, or point and a half since we started the show. So leaking a little bit there on the overall market as well. Twitter, 21,000 to sell. ConocoPhillips, 29,000 to sell. It's probably because oil is trading down here in the pre-market. We are down about 1% on the USO.
All right. I mean, for this, well, going back to the bank stocks, I mean, they're just holding above support. You know, look at the $22 area in Bank America is huge. It's just, you know, it's like one of those things where when we were looking at the AMD, which we're both kicking ourselves over that we didn't get it under 11. Oh. It's like it's holding in here, and it's like, okay, so is it going to flush out and go to 21, or is just the big money just accumulating it here? So it's a tough trade here. And Dennis, let's just go back to the AMD. I was kind of
I don't want to talk about it. I said on the show I wanted to buy into the tens. I said it multiple times on the show. And then I was looking and it hung out, you know, just in the 1080, 1090 area for about a week and a half. Even got down to 1056 that one day. And I'm kicking myself. It was on my list to buy. It said right on my paper, throw AMD in your investment portfolio, because I thought, you know, because of the way NVIDIA's been running, I think AMD is going to become a stock that might actually eventually move back up to that 15 area that it was in February. And now we're already off to the races. So I'm really kicking myself here that I did not buy it. I had two chances to get it in the tens, like multiple chances, actually, not just two, multiple chances. Did not buy it. Bad call by, or bad, no, good call by me, not a good purchase by me because I didn't buy it. Got to follow what I was thinking on that one.
Yeah, there was, it was mentioned at the Apple event, and then I guess there was some news, I can't substantiate this, that it mining for Bitcoin, whatever that is, that the AMD was gonna. Did you see that news?
Yeah, actually, I did see that. Mining, that's how you get Bitcoins, right? So the massive rally in Bitcoin had led to a shortage of chips because everyone's like going out to buy, you know, computers, and they need to mine for Bitcoins. Because that's how you do it. You use your.
What is that? Do you understand this process of the actual mining?
Because you use
this
your computer. Yes.
Ridiculous,
yes.
To me as an outsider.
No, you use your computer. It runs like algorithms that return you Bitcoins. That's how I understand
what?
It.
What? Yeah. Why is that necessary? Like, why can't you just get the Bitcoin?
Well,
I don't get
so there's
why
all,
you got to go like
certain...
it's like digging for gold. We're going to go dig for Bitcoins in our, you know, cyberspace.
There's only a certain amount of Bitcoin available. But like in the world.
So it's like panhandling. They got all the, you know, the gold, you know, and now you're panhandling in cyberland for Bitcoin.
Pretty much, yeah. That's a good way of putting it.
Oh man, I had no idea. So that's just funny that that's how you do it. I don't have to do it that way, but yeah, we've had the Bitcoin conversation here before. I don't understand it personally. I'm not going to get involved with it because I don't understand it. Congratulations to everybody who's been long it, because obviously the thing has been a rocket ship here. I don't know how you value it, and that's why I can't invest in it.
All right, real quick here, J.P. Morgan out defending X here. We did have some infrastructure talk. What did J.P. Morgan say here about U.S. Steel down in the lower 20 handle?
I can go digging. Spencer, do you have that? I can grab it if you want.
I don't have the actual comments. Let me dig as well. I just have
I know they said offending. It's not apart. Yeah. That was like the big headline.
How about the gap fill from the election, Dennis? I mean, come on. What a tech. I don't know. This one's looking kind of tempting down here. I know there's
I'll bet. Tempted to.
I know you're going to say you have the best in breed in what, Nucor or whatever. But
it hasn't much either, and they all kind of move together. I've had Nucor in my portfolio for like a decade. It's really been best of breed, but it's really done nothing in the last 10 years. If you go out to the chart, it's kind of went nowhere. I'm up a little bit at it.
I mean, what about – I mean, we talk about gap fills, and if you would have held on from that one, there was a big one after the election. I don't know, man. Let's see if this can get off the ground. Maybe clearing 22 be a good level. But, you know, if you're looking at risk-reward, you could – and I know we're trading up in the pre-market, but if you get this thing at 20, you know, and you give yourself, let's say, a five-point stop even on a swing train.
Five-point stop?
Okay.
Never – That's a little bit crazy there.
No,
Joel.
No, I'm talking for a long-term swing trade, portfolio trade.
20 to 50, lose 30% or lose 25%. Okay. I don't like losing 25% on my swing trades. My stops are a lot tighter than that.
Oh, really? What about Gilead?
I'd say 18.55. If I was giving myself a stop out and I was buying here today or yesterday at 20.29, I know it's 20.87 this morning, but as I was buying at the box, I'd stop out below the low at 18.55.
Okay, AK Steel trying to get off the ground as well. That filled its earnings.
I got your X comments for you.
Sure, go ahead.
JP Morgan called the stock right now an excellent entry point. The current level is a far too negative view. He believes that I guess he met with the CEO. He believes they're going to better exploit supply and demand fundamentals, within the Trump administration to reduce import supplies in the near term and increase infrastructure demand long term.
These analysts are so witty there, Joel. Excellent entry. I like that. Excellent.
Yeah, they're starting. All right. Am I S&P stuck here? Because I'm seeing 24.30.75 for like the last hour. I see crude moving, but just a quiet market. We did have a decent range in the S&Ps. Oh, actually, I'm looking at the .D, and we're actually trading at 24.32 and a quarter, up a buck and a half, right near that pre-market high of 33 and a quarter. Got a little bit of resistance up above, but that hasn't been a problem in a lot of the other sessions. So keep an eye on yesterday's high at 35.75. Then our all-time close is 39.75. And our all-time closing high is 37.5. So a lot of numbers up there in the upper 24.30 handle. Spencer, 8.59, right on the nose. What's on the docket for tomorrow?
On the docket for tomorrow is Anne Marie Band, one of our favorite guests. She is an author and financial analyst and a technical trader. One of our favorite guests, like us. She is a author of thetradingbook.com is her site. Also wrote the book, The Trading Book Course, A Practical Guide to Profiting with Technical Analysis. We'll get Anne Marie on the show tomorrow. As for today's show, you can listen to the whole thing again on our podcast. It's on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Just search for Benzinga or Premarket or subscribe to any of those channels to get them sent to you automatically. You can also listen to the show. You can replay it on YouTube. You can just go to the Benzinga TV YouTube channel and replay the show as it aired live. You can do that again by subscribing to Benzinga TV on YouTube. Don't forget about Benzinga Pro. It's Benzinga's real-time newsfeed platform that we use during the show every day. And please remember that all the information, material, and content from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. Have a good rest of your Wednesday, everyone. We'll see you folks tomorrow.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.